This is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour of the Dyer Baptist Church with our co-pastors, David M. Atkinson and Dr. Lee Atkinson. We are coming to you from Dyer, Indiana. Our prayer is that you will be strengthened by the word today. Now, here is our pastor.
Turn, please, to Deuteronomy 30, verse 11. Deuteronomy 30, 11. Our subject in this 10 o'clock session is covenant relationships. Covenant relationships. We're looking at both our vertical covenant relationship with God and our horizontal covenant relationships with our family members, our fellow church members, and our neighbors and business associates. Covenant relationships, loyalty and integrity in our relationships. We need to complete the last section of lesson 5. And so I hope you have your lesson from last week. If you didn't get last week, Jane will give you a copy of last week's lesson if you'll raise your hand. We'll be coming to the last section of lesson 5 in just a few moments. Now, as we have our unison reading, I want us to be understanding that when we read from Deuteronomy 30, what we're going to be seeing and hearing is what we might call typical or model covenant language. We're going to be reading just now typical or model, the common covenant language in the Middle East and the Near East. All right, it's a long passage, but I want us to see some of the elements that were built into these Near Eastern and Mideastern covenants. Let's read in unison Deuteronomy 30, 11 through 19 together. For this commandment which I command thee this day, it is not hidden from thee, neither is it far off. It is not in heaven that thou shouldest say, who shall go up for us to heaven and bring it unto us that we may hear it and do it? Neither is it beyond the sea that thou shouldest say, who shall go over the sea for us and bring it unto us that we may hear it and do it? Now watch it, verse 14. But the word is very nigh unto thee in thy mouth and in thy heart, that thou mayest do it. See, I have set before thee this day life and good, and death and evil, in that I command thee this day to love the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments, and his statutes, and his judgments, that thou mayest live and multiply, and that the Lord thy God shall bless thee in the land whither thou goest to possess it. But if thine heart turn away, so that thou wilt not hear, but shall be drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I denounce unto you this day that ye shall surely perish, and that ye shall not prolong your days upon the land whither thou passest over Jordan to go to possess it. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live. What we've been reading is typical covenant language. It is model covenant language for the Near East and the Far East. Now, we're going to break it down and see some of the common elements that were often in these Near Eastern covenants. And so please look at your outline. We're looking at the elements, the pattern, the model or form. The elements, pattern, model or form of typical covenants in the Near East. Old Testament covenants, your first blank is old. Old Testament covenants from Mount Sinai on take the form of ancient Middle Eastern suzerainty or rulership treaties. The covenants that we read about in the Bible from Mount Sinai on take the form or the pattern of ancient Middle or Near Eastern suzerainty rulership treaty. Now, time permitting, we'll spend more time today looking at why I believe that all of these ancient Near and Middle Eastern covenants stem from a common source. I believe that God gave the pattern. I believe that God gave the model. And that all of those groups were taking their lead from God. And the elements that He built into the original covenant. What are some of the elements that you should expect to find in a typical Near Eastern or Far Eastern covenant? Well, number one, the ruler is identified. Often right at the beginning, the ruler is identified right away and his titles or names are given. The ruler is identified near the beginning to set the environment and so that everyone who sees the covenant knows the frame of reference and who the ruler is. The ruler is identified and his titles and names are given. Who has Exodus 21 and 2? Okay, I'm coming over. Exodus 20, verses 1 and 2. Listen to me.
And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage.
I am the Lord thy God. I am Jehovah Elohim. All right? That's how this covenant with Israel begins. It identifies the ruler, the leader, gives his names, and often built into those names or titles were his attributes and his characteristics. So the ruler is identified, and his titles and names are given. I am the Lord thy God. This is who is talking to you. This is who is communicating to you. I am Jehovah Elohim, and you'd better listen up. You had better listen up, because I am Jehovah Elohim, and you better know from where I'm coming. And in knowing the context, then you better think hard about how you respond to my offer of a covenant. Now, in these suzerainty covenants, there's a second element that is often in them. What the ruler has done for his people is recounted. What the ruler has done for his people is recounted. We're coming out to Exodus 19, 4 through 6. Who has that? Exodus 19, 4 through 6. Listen, please, as, in this case, God builds up the reasons or the context as to why Israel should listen up. Here we go.
You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if ye will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me, above all people, for all the earth is mine. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests, and an holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel.
Thank you, brother. Could you give us the first verse again? It's a good verse. They all are.
Ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself.
Thank you. So the next typical element of the common Near Eastern covenants was that the ruler who is offering the covenant says, this is what I've done for you. Here's the list. I've taken care of you. I've watched over you. And the implication is you owe it to me. You owe it to me to enter into covenant relationship with me and be obedient to me, because this is what I have done for you. Over and over again in these Near Eastern covenants, you see this. First, the name and the title of the ruler, and then secondly, what he has done for the people to whom he is offering a covenant relationship. All right, there's a third element in the pattern or model for typical covenants. Number three, the principles or laws that are to govern the relationship between the ruler and his subjects are stated. The principles or laws that govern the relationship, that are supposed to govern the relationship between the ruler and his subjects, are stated. Exodus 21:1. Who has that? Exodus 21:1. All right, here we come.
Now these are the judgments which thou shalt set before them.
All right, and it goes on, verse after verse after verse, listing the commandments. These are the judgments. Here are the laws. Here are the laws that will form the basis for our agreement. Here are the laws that will form the basis for our getting along and for my treating you the way you want to be treated. Right, number four. The fourth element in a typical Near Eastern covenant is this. The blessings to be won by obedience and the punishments due upon disobedience are stated. The ruler says, here are the commands, here are my rules. If you obey my commands, you'll be blessed. If you disobey, you'll be punished. The blessings to be won by obedience and the punishment due upon disobedience are stated. In the case of the divine ruler, Jehovah Elohim and Israel, Mount Gerizim was to be an object lesson regarding their blessings. Deuteronomy 27:12. I've mentioned this before. We can't take time to read it, but it's just so pertinent. Mount Gerizim was to be an object lesson, and they rehearsed. Six of the tribes went over on Gerizim, and God rehearsed to the people with whom he wanted to be in covenant. God rehearsed the blessing that would come to them if they obeyed and kept the commandments. And then Mount Ebal was to be an object lesson on their curses if they broke covenant and violated the commands. And then the fifth element that was common to many of these Near Eastern, Middle Eastern covenant relationships between rulers and subjects. The fifth element was the acceptance of the covenant by the governed. The acceptance of the covenant by the governed. And that was to be recorded. It was to be written down so there was no wiggle room. God said in the case of God's offer to covenant relationship with Israel, God's, I'm writing it down and I want you people to go on record that you agree. All right, Exodus 24:7-8. Exodus 24:7. The people who are entering into covenant with the ruler were to go on record as accepting the terms of the covenant.
And he took the book of the covenant and read it in the audience of the people. And they said, all that the Lord has said, we will do and be obedient. And Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, behold, the blood of the covenant, which the Lord hath made with you concerning all these words.
Thank you. Blood, book, and covenant. Blood, book, covenant. Please say that with me. Blood, book, covenant. These things are recorded. Blood, book, and covenant. The blood seals the promises that are made and recorded in the book. The blood seals the promises that are made mutually and recorded in the book. All right, let's get on, please. I said that if time permitted, I would tell you why I believe that all of these Near Eastern covenants stem from a common source. And so I'm calling lesson 6, part 1, the prevalence of covenant making. I'm referring to the strong probability that all the covenants, even among the pagans, could trace their inspiration and their origin back to the very first covenant. All right, the widespread existence, that's the first blank. The widespread existence of the practice of covenant relationships strongly suggests that the custom has an ancient and common source. The widespread existence of the practice of covenant relationships strongly suggests that the custom has an ancient and common source. As indicated in a previous lesson, it is logical and plausible to deduce that God Himself originated the institution or convention of the covenant. I believe that the whole concept of covenanting came from God. I believe God is the originator or the institutor of the concept of covenant. And so it is logical and plausible to deduce that God Himself originated the institution or convention of the covenant after Adam and Eve had sinned in the Garden of Eden. There was a problem, a big problem, sin. And that problem spoiled a relationship, and that spoiling had to be corrected. This was, after all, the first break in relationships in human history. This was the first break in relationships in human history. Note, I say human history. I thought that we have some very, very on-the-ball students in this class. Some very, very clever people. Some great students in this class. Well, you all are, but I could just imagine some of you saying, "Well, Pastor, what about the break between God and Lucifer?" Yes, that was the first break. But I'm talking about the first break between God and human beings. This was, after all, the first break in relationships in human history. The relationship between God and mankind was broken. Oh, I'm so torn in these lessons. Look at the reference. Genesis 3, 8 through 11. The relationship between God and mankind was broken. Adam, where are you? That's indicative of a relationship that has broken apart. And the man and the woman hid themselves. They hid themselves from the Lord in the garden. And the Lord has to say, "Adam, where are you?" And they said, "We heard your voice and we were afraid." And so the first covenant fellowship and the first covenant relationship is broken in the Garden of Eden. But not only is the relationship between mankind and God broken, the relationship between husband and wife, the horizontal relationship, is also broken. God asks leading questions. And we see this first break in relationships among human beings, when the man says, "It was that woman you gave me." Now, ladies, if you were that woman, I think you'd be feeling a little fussed with the old boy. "Adam, what have you done?" "Well, God, it was that woman that you gave to me." And then it says that the man's going to have to work by sweat, and the woman will have pain in delivering babies. And the Bible says that the desire of the wife will be unto her husband. And there's the connotation or implication of conflict in this whole question of male headship and male leadership. Marriage doesn't always go smoothly since the fall, right? You don't have to raise your hand. Are there ever any conflicts? Yes, of course. I appreciate your transparency. We can't get anywhere in Bible teaching if we aren't transparent with each other and honest. And so, it was in the Garden of Eden that relationships were first broken. The relationship between mankind and God, and the relationship between the husband and the wife. The relationship between husband and wife was also simultaneously marred. When the relationship between mankind and God was marred simultaneously, the relationship between the man and the woman was marred. The scriptures clearly indicate that God taught. I believe it with all my heart. I don't believe I'm reading in. It's there, in my opinion. If you disagree, that's all right. But in my opinion, this is all there in the Genesis record. The scriptures clearly indicate that God taught Adam and Eve that the shedding of blood played a crucial role in the healing of the breach in their fellowship with Him. Oh, we've got to take time to read Genesis 3. Genesis 3 and 21. Let's read it in unison and read it in a good strong voice. Genesis 3, 21. Together, please, the first word is unto. Unto Adam also and to his wife did the Lord God make coats of skins and clothe them. How did God get the skins? How? He killed an animal. He killed an animal, perhaps, and probably a lamb. In shedding the blood, in killing the animal, God taught Adam and Eve that the shedding of blood played a crucial role in the healing of the breach in their fellowship with Him. It is also obvious that Adam and Eve passed the knowledge and procedure of covenanting on to their sons. Let's go to Genesis 4:4. Genesis 4:4. And be prepared to read that with me in unison. Genesis 4:4. If you got it and able, let's read together, please. Let's read it strongly. Genesis 4:4. And Abel, he also brought of the first things of his flock, and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. Verse 5 tells us, but the Lord did not have respect to Cain and his offering. It's plain then that Adam and Eve passed the knowledge and procedure of blood covenanting onto their sons. How did Abel know to do this? Well, he knew to do this because his parents taught both sons. This is what we do, and this is what is expected. Now, the unbelieving, covenant-breaking son Cain murdered his covenant-keeping brother Abel. Genesis 4, 8 through 10. The unbelieving, covenant-breaking son Cain murdered his covenant-keeping brother Abel. And the book of Hebrews makes it plain that lying underneath of Cain's unsatisfactory sacrifice was unbelief. Lying underneath of the unsatisfactory nature of Cain's offering, it's called, was the issue of unbelief. It was Cain's unbelief that did not engage in blood sacrifice. The core issue was Cain's unbelief. Hebrews chapter 11. Abel was a believer, an obedient believer. Cain was a disobedient unbeliever. However, Eve gave birth to a third son, Seth, who became a substitute for Abel. That's what the mother says. I'm not reading into it. Eve said, "This is my substitute son in the place of Abel, who was murdered." Seth became a substitute for Abel, and Seth also chose to walk in covenant fellowship with God. And so we're left with an unbelieving, disobedient son, Cain, and the third son born takes up the torch for the believing, obedient seed. You say, "Well, how do you know, Pastor? How do you know that Seth, the third son, took up the torch for the obedient, believing line?" Well, I know that because of Genesis 4:25. Let's turn there. Genesis 4:25. Genesis 4:25. I'll read it. Genesis 4:25. "And Adam knew his wife again, and she bare a son and called his name Seth. For God," said she, "hath appointed me another seed." There has to be a godly line. There has to be a believing, obedient line. "God hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain, the disbelieving, disobedient seed, slew. And to Seth," watch it, "and to Seth, to him also there was born a son. And Seth called his son's name Enos, colon." The colon is important to me because after the colon, there is a summary of the entire 26th verse. I repeat, the colon is important because after the colon, there is a summary of this new line, this more hopeful line. It's a summary. "Then began men to call upon the name of the Lord." And so, it was in Seth, the third son, the believing, obedient son, and his son, that the line for believing obedience was carried on. "Then began men to call upon the name of the Lord." And it's all set up under the heading of Seth at the beginning of 26. Seth, da 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 da. Seth, da 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 da. Seth had a son, and Seth's son followed the ways of the Lord. In those days, father and son, men began to call upon the name of the Lord. Now, missionary David Livingston, you see our blurb at the top of your outline that talks about the practice of the blood covenant showing up all over Africa. And I'm quoting this information to buttress my statement that I believe the custom and model of making covenants came from common source, the Garden of Eden. David Livingston found the custom in Equatorial Africa. Livingston discovered that blood brotherhood was very prevalent among African tribes. He discovered that blood brotherhood was very prevalent among African tribes. And, oh, Get the book. Get the book on blood covenants by H. Clay Trumbull. In July 1854, you see it's even dated. These things were recorded. These things were logged. This is history. This is not some conservative Baptist dreaming this stuff up. This is history. It's real. In 1854, in order to show respect and build relationships or friendships, Dr. Livingston entered into the rite of the ceremony or the covenant he called Kasendi with Queen Manenko of the Volund tribes. Dr. Livingston was wise. He wanted to open Africa. And if you want to accomplish a goal, you should make friends with those who can help you accomplish the goal, as long as you can do so without sinning. And Livingston understood that Queen Manenko was an influential person. If you study African history, there were powerful queens, powerful women, giving leadership to many of the African tribes. And there are their names. So Livingston wisely said, all right, I need to have a relationship with this tribe. I need to enter into Kasendi covenant with the queen. Now, the fact that proxies, the queen's husband, and one of Livingston's Makaolo attendants represented the two principals in no way lessened the binding force of this compact. Let me explain what's going on. Let's explain what's going on. Honey, would you come here? All right, good. Good. All right. Okay. This is Queen Manenko, right? You all know that. This is Queen Manenko. All right. And I'm her husband. And David Harnett and Brother Paul, would you come? All right. All right. Good. You stand here. This is Dr. David Livingston. He has a mustache, right? And David Livingston, in most of his pictures, had a mustache. And this is an attendant of Livingston, all right? This is one of Dr. Livingston's attendants who helped carry the medicine and the provisions and over the portage and so on. So this is Dr. Livingston. This is his attendant. This is the queen. And I am her husband. Guess what? Step back just a little bit. The two principals have two proxies. It's you and me. It's you and me, Mr. Attendant. Come on over here. It could be done by proxy. It was often done by proxy. Now, you can't do that in the covenant of marriage. You can't have proxy covenanting in marriage. But in the case of one of these early covenant fellowships between Livingston and the queen of one of the tribes to build friendship there along the equator, the two principals had to proxy. But it was just as binding. It was just as binding and just as firm as if the queen and Dr. Livingston had done it themselves. Do you understand? Oh, read history. Thank you. You were great. What a wonderful queen, and what a wonderful Dr. Livingston, and what a handsome attendant for Dr. Livingston. On another occasion, when Dr. Livingston was removing a tumor, again, if you want to have good relationships, be friendly. This young woman had a tumor The African woman had a tumor in her forearm. And Dr. Livingston said, all right, I will remove it. I have my tools. I will remove it. But while Livingston was removing a tumor from a young African woman's forearm, one of her small arteries squirted some blood into Livingston's eye. What did she say? She said, you were a friend before, but now you are a blood relative. Livingston received some of her blood in his eye, an exchange of blood. The life of the flesh is in the blood. Life for life. Leviticus. She said, you were a friend before. Now you are a blood relative. You have some of my blood. When you pass this way, please send me word that I may cook for you. Well, the husbands in our class this morning, the husband got a cook by entering into covenant. That was supposed to be funny. The husbands in our class this morning got a cook by entering into the marriage covenant. And Livingston got a cook in that tribe because this woman's blood squirted into his eye and she said, we were friends. Now you're a blood relative. I will cook for you whenever you pass through this way. Well, we're looking at the fact that you'll find remnants of the concept of blood covenant all throughout Africa. And next week, we will look at how there are remnants of the concept of blood covenanting in Europe. It wasn't just the Semites, those in the Near East. It came from God, I'm convinced, and it spread through the whole known world.
Very much like Jesus. Thank you for joining us today. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. graceglory7@juno.com. Pastor David M. Atkinson also has a ministry on Facebook and invites you to connect with him there. Now, until the next time, remember to walk softly with the Lord.